Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And today we take a look at science, science research, and education to begin our program. Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. Our guest, he also is Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. And then certainly as we move along today and talk with him about ton of things in the science area, the research and education area, I hope you'll join in with your questions. And to do that, you can call 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. And Bassam, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Larry.
Great to have you here. You know, President-elect Obama is making several cabinet appointments, and just this morning, or at least last night, it might have been announced, we have a new education secretary.
Yes, yes. That's the superintendent, chief executive of the schools in Chicago. Not surprising that President-elect Obama would reach for someone that he knows and someone that has actually accomplished quite a bit in the Chicago school system. All big school systems, how shall I say this, are in trouble. Mm-hmm. There are serious issues that relate to the economic standards in inner city schools, issues that relate to quality of teachers, issues that relate to the facilities, issues that relate to the curriculum. A whole slew of societal issues, and it's really, really essential to take a fresh look at what's happening. And I'm hopeful that the new administration will go in that direction. I don't know Mr. Duncan, but I've read a bit about him. Colleagues of mine in education and in other areas that care about such things give him high marks. But as you said, Larry, there are other cabinet officers being appointed, and Energy Secretary. You know, the Energy Secretary is a Nobel Prize winner in physics,
and that's the first time, isn't it?
I think it's the first time that a Nobel laureate is appointed to a cabinet position, and I think he brings a lot of credibility within the scientific community, of course. But the nature of the job is not scientific. The nature of the job is political. But his credentials in science are impeccable. And in the past half a dozen years or so, when he was the director of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in California, he focused his attention on climate issues. And in fact, the entire list of appointees that President-elect Obama has announced, they sound very promising, and we just have to be careful about expecting too much initially. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for the new administration to feel its way through what has to be done, especially in this very difficult economic environment that we're in. We have a major crisis, Larry. It's a human crisis. It's a crisis of confidence. It's a crisis of trust. All advances in science and technology cannot address these issues. We all have to address them together. So it's very, very important that we keep the pressure on our elected officials to make sure that good progress is made in addressing climate changes, in addressing education issues, in addressing health-related matters that deal with nutrition, with wellness. All of these have their bases in science, Larry, and it's really good that Mr. Chu, Stephen Chu, will be the Secretary of Energy. We'll have to wait and see who the president's science advisor is.
Yeah, we haven't learned that yet. And you know, I'm thinking about this. Stephen Chu is a great scientist, obviously. The question is, can scientists make good political leaders? that's the issue, because there's a lot of politics.
That's a very good question, Larry. There are some well-known examples of scientists who have become strong political leaders. For example, Margaret Thatcher. She holds a PhD in chemistry and then became the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And, you know, regardless of what you think about what she did and what she stood for and so on.
She was certainly a strong leader.
She was a strong leader. And I think what science and scientists bring to the political arena is sound judgment. Sound judgment about issues that are technical in nature. The political decision and the set of political interactions, I think they have to be led by the political leaders. But I really salute President-elect Obama for selecting Stephen Chu to be the Secretary of Energy. I think the entire team that deals with EPA, for example, and deals with the Department of Interior. I haven't heard who the Secretary of Agriculture is going to be, but that's a daunting task in itself. All of these, I think the team is very promising. But that's why I say we have to be realistic about our expectations, and we really need to push our congresspeople, our senators, to provide the proper environment for good changes in science policy, in economic policy, in all societal policies, because there's a lot at stake here.
Yeah, a lot at stake. You know, as we take a look at education in the science math realm, the Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study, that compared the achievements of U.S. 4th and 8th grade students compared to the students of other countries. Now, we improved, but we're still lagging.
Well, there are improvements, as you say, in mathematics, not so much in science.
We did improve.
We did improve at the fourth grade level and the eighth grade level. You know, Larry, these international comparisons that are made are really a warning system to us. It's not terribly important to be number one, because I really don't know what that means. I mean, you know, so you and others in the listening audience remember that President George Bush in 1989 said that the goal by the year 2000 for the U.S. was to be number one in science and mathematics. There are statements made like that call our attention to serious issues that we face in science and math education. But I really don't know what it means to be number one. It means that the students' scores are higher than other scores. But are the students being prepared in a sound way to be useful citizens? Are they going to be successful in college? These are telltales. I am for the telltales. I think they tell us something. But I think it's very, very important to keep them in perspective and to try to continue the emphasis on improving the quality of education in all educational settings, inner city school systems, rural systems, suburban systems. It's really, really very important, because education is the key to success in all human endeavor. Education, good education is the key. And, you know, in my case, I emphasize science education.
Sure.
I know a little bit about it. And I think it is important in this very advanced scientific and technological society that we live in to really begin to appreciate what the value of science is, and also learn about the limitations of advances in science and how we can control the consequences of all kinds of improvements and all kinds of changes that happen in science and technology. So, you know, your question about these trends, yeah, they're disturbing. But I'll tell you, Larry, I will not trade the educational systems that we have in the United States with any other educational system in the world. We have a great deal of diversity. We have a great deal of talent. We have a great deal of potential. We have the freedom to put the right curriculum materials in place. I am very, very supportive of the diversity that we have here, but I'd like to see some standards. I'd like to see some national standards, not federal standards. Mm. We don't want the federal government to impose or interfere with the educational systems. But we need leadership. We need strong leadership. And we need to renew our commitment to high-quality performance standards on the part of students, on the part of teachers, and you know what? On the part of communities. Because all of these tests are reflections of what local communities do in their educational systems.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, UW-Madison professor of chemistry. And as always, when he comes by, we talk about a wide range of issues relating to science education and science research. Certainly, if you'd like to join in, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Just one other little area to bring up as we move along here a bit, and that has to do with nanotechnology. There's a new report from the National Research Council that says the federal government's research plan for assessing the potential environmental or the health or the safety risks of nanomaterials is not adequate. What do we need to do there to reduce the risk of associated with nanotechnologies?
I think it's a very important area where science and technology are making great advances, but we need to be concerned about safety issues, what these nanoparticles do to us, to the environment. So I think the National Research Council report is not only timely, but provides a forum, a platform for having trade associations, researchers, government agencies, state agencies focus on the safety issues. And I know my colleagues here at UW-Madison in the materials research areas, they're concerned about this. And as you can imagine, when something like this, when a report like this comes out, there are always misunderstandings about it. So this is not to frighten people about what's happening in nanotechnology. This is just to make sure that we all understand what risks are involved in the use of these materials at the very small, at the nano level, at the smaller than the micro level. And I think that the understanding what the, as you said, the environmental and health-related consequences of these materials is of interest to us. You know, the research in at the nano scale can be very helpful to deliver drugs in targeted fashion to certain parts of the body, whether it's a human body or an animal. But we must be aware, knowingly addressing the consequences of these new technologies.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking science research, science education with Bassam Shakashiri, Larry Mueller here. Really happy to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. Or you can also email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. And let's take some calls. Carl in Milwaukee, we go to you now. Carl, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Bassam.
Good morning.
I am very happy about the appointments that Barack Obama is making for his cabinet. I see science being restored to a place of honor in our society. But one of the things that I'd like to hear you talk about, Bassam, is the cost of higher education and the affordability of college for ordinary people. College costs, like medical costs, are increasing rapidly, much faster than inflation, and more of the cost is being shifted in the form of tuition to the students and the families. Could you comment, please?
Yes, Carl, thank you for bringing this point up. It's an important point because it does affect the way in which we address not only scientific support for scientific research, but support for education. So we really have to be looking very hard about how educational systems are funded, or what fraction comes from the public trust, from the states, from the federal government, what fraction comes from the private sector. The private sector, by the way, invests heavily in education. And then we also have to make it affordable, make education affordable to everyone in our population, because I'm a firm believer that that education really is a business, and the business of education is the development of talent, and all of our citizens must have opportunities to develop their talents. So your question is about the economics of it and how to keep tuition affordable at the college level. I'm about, as everyone else is, about to pay my my property tax.
Yes.
And the biggest single item in the property tax is to support the schools, and the second biggest one is to support the technical colleges. Mm-hmm. I studied this the other day, Larry, so I know what I'm talking about. So, but Carl is asking how to keep the system moving and keep the system attractive to people so that they can afford to pay the tuition. And that's why we have scholarships, we have grants and aid. This is where the wisdom of the federal government enters into the picture in terms of using money for supporting fellowships for students. There are Pell Grants. There are all kinds of provisions that are in place. And the question is, in this very difficult economic time that we face here, how will those be affected? And will this play out in such a way to turn people off from being able to go to college? So Carl, you raise a very, very important question about striking a good balance in terms of the funding available for education, for research, so that it is it can be afforded by the people who want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Carl, for calling. Appreciate your call. Ralph in Genoa City is up next with a question. Ralph, hi. Thank you for calling.
How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two grandsons. One of them is a brainiac, and he is a junior in college, and he's going to be a teacher. He's got like a 4.0 average and so on. And then we have the younger brother, who's a junior in high school, who is a good student, but he has to work a lot harder. And he wants to be a marine biologist, and then people are trying to talk him into being a veterinarian because he works with people that have pets, or not pets, but have a kennel. And my question is, I see a lot of confusion because he has so many different opportunities. He's got the type of mind that could relate to any kind of scientific endeavor, but he has a hard time choosing. Is there any kind of place he can go where they can talk about different things and kind of give him a heads up on what he's thinking, then they help him make a choice? Because I can remember when I was younger, we didn't have the choices that they have today, and it was very little confusion. There was, you just went into it and you did it. Now, with all of these opportunities and that, what help is there for young people that want to go into the science fields, but it just looks too complicated to them?
Yeah, not sure where to go. All right. What do you think, Bassam?
I love your question, Ralph. It's very important for all of us to recognize the fantastic opportunities that are available here, and they can be confusing. So the first thing I would say, well, that was the first thing I said. The second thing I would say is do not push him to make a decision now. Do not force him to make a decision now. Let him learn about so many different options. Let him enjoy learning. Learning is a very enjoyable human activity. It's hard. There's no question about it. You said he has to work a little harder than his brother. Well, we all have to work hard. We all must work hard. We must apply ourselves to the tasks that are in front of us so we learn how to make choices. One of the most difficult things we do in life is to decide what we want to do when we are a grown-up. And there are some grown-ups that are still trying to make that decision. But so I would say give him books to read. Give him suggest, you know, there are, if you go to my website, I have some suggested readings that are suitable not only for adults, but some of them are for students. Learn about the writings of people who have gone through what your grandson is going through so that they can make a decision. Well, of course, there are counselors in school, teachers. I would say the combination of advice that he would get from his teachers, from counselors, from you, from the parents, are very, very important. And I would advise patience. I would advise nurturing his curiosities. I would advise guidance in terms of what he reads, what he studies. And grade point average is important, but it isn't everything. It's one telltale. It's one telltale. I think we want people to do well in school. There's no question about it. But we want school requirements to be motivating students to learn, not to say, okay, because I didn't do so well in this course, then I'm being prohibited from going on further. So I just would like to say be encouraging, be supportive, be patient. Try to nurture the curiosity that he has. I don't know your grandson, but I'm confident he's curious about lots of different things. And try to field those questions. Try to say sometimes when you get a question from him, I don't know the answer. It's okay to say I don't know. If we knew all the answers, you know, we wouldn't be.
We wouldn't have to worry about it.
Right. So that's my advice, Ralph.
And the website, Bassam's website, which contains a lot of great information, not only the books that he mentioned, but experiments and other things for a broad range of people. I know because I've spent a lot of time at that website. It's www.scifun.org. SCIFUN.org. Great place to go, and you might find some books there, Ralph, that would be appealing.
And Ralph, we have experiments that you and your grandson can do at home. They're posted there. They download them. They're all safe and very instructive and a lot of fun.
Thanks again, Ralph, for calling.
Would you have time for another comment?
All right, go ahead.
My oldest grandson that I was telling you about, is you talk about the finances. He, with his grade point average, and that is getting a phenomenal education for what seems to be a lot less than normal. He's even going to Rome this January to study. And through his work and aggressiveness, he is going to educate himself and pay for it, too.
It's a great.
More
power to him.
More power to him and to you and to the environment that he's in. That's what we're talking about. Providing an environment that nurtures development, nurtures talent, and that includes international travel.
Let's go to Bruce in Hayward next. Bruce, hello to you.
Hello. I have a comment. You were talking earlier about scientists as politicians, and I have a little concern about scientists as politicians. I don't think they have a real human touch. Let me do a little bit of a story very quickly. A friend of mine was teaching a graduate management class. They dealt with a troubled employee, and he said, how many of you would work with this student? Some raised their hand. He said, how many of you would just fire him? A bunch of people raised their hands. He said, oh, by the way, how many of you are engineers? The same people raised their hands. They didn't want to deal with the human side. I would like my politicians to have more of a human touch than most scientists that I know.
All right.
Very good observation, Bruce. Yes, it's true that scientists and engineers do not always portray themselves as being caring people. We are caring people. the domain of science is different than the domain of political interaction. Although there's lots of politics in science too, but that's not what Bruce is talking about. You're so right. And that's why I said about Stephen Chu that he is an accomplished researcher recognized by the Nobel Prize in Physics. But he also cares about issues that are based on science and related to science as they affect our society. Otherwise, why would he take on a position in a political position in the administration? This is not going to advance his scientific career. This is going to take advantage of the tremendous power that he and others that he will surround himself with addresses matters related to science. We need to have sound judgment about issues that relate to pollution control, issues that relate to stem cell research, issues that relate to health, all kinds of issues that are based on science. I think we need good scientific presence at the highest level of the governments in order to assure proper political decisions. And you are so right that we need to bring forward the humanity part, the human part of scientists. So I hope that addresses your concern, Bruce.
I know a lot of scientists. I like them. It's just that they just focus so heavily on the science and the technical. They do forget the human side, and I'm glad to see a lot of scientists in the government. I'm not saying that. It's just I want them also to care about people, and that's what you've been saying.
Let's help ourselves and help each other to do what you said, Bruce.
That's a good point. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And by the way, we finally have some open lines again. We've got Mike coming up next, but you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll be glad to get you on the air. Mike in Milwaukee, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Three quick points.
Okay.
One, senior citizens used to get into the university and take accredited courses, which they would receive credit for, and they stopped doing that. But senior citizens have been paying taxes into that system their whole lives. And not only that, but they bring a great wealth of experience to the classroom, and you don't segregate it according to age. Then you have interesting conversations with people that have had experience in the field. And so I want you to put back senior citizens and allow them to take credits free. Not only that, but they would identify with the institution, and upon their death, they would probably leave money, or they might give money right away. So it's a way of raising funds. Number two. Textbooks are ridiculous. They're $150 a piece, and every time you go to a class, they change a textbook each year. What a racket. And so they need to have, if you're going to update a textbook, why not just have a supplement? Why not just sell a supplement and use the same textbook over? There's a lot of wasted money in that. I think I'm going to just end it there, but I have a lot of points that I could bring up. The system could be improved greatly.
All right. Well, we've got a couple things there to address, Bassam.
You're right, Mike. Your comment about textbooks, let me start with that. I agree with you 100%. In fact, I'm very concerned about the very high cost of textbooks. You know, it's almost $900, $1,000 per year, you know, for all the textbooks that the students at the college level have to pay. Yeah, I think the textbook publishing industry has to be made quite a bit more accountable. I think the use of textbooks now, by the way, is being greatly affected by the web technology. So there are some material that are available on the web, and teachers and professors refer to them and use them. And I think that would help a little bit in terms of cutting down the costs. But I do have a little concern about that, because I don't want to shift the responsibility of learning from the class to the web, which is another topic we can talk about some other time. Your comment about senior citizens, yes, I've had in my classes, in my chemistry classes, people who were retired and sat in on a class and, as you say, learned from the learned along with the other students and provided a good perspective. I think learning at all ages is a very healthy thing to do. I wasn't aware that that you can't do that anymore, but maybe
I'm not so sure that's the case.
Yeah.
I was trying to find look that up. I'll look into that a bit more, and maybe you and I can look into that both. And next time you're on, for sure, if I can't find it right now while we're talking, raise it as an issue again the next time you're on the air. Maybe even put it up on your website.
I'll do that. Yes,
put it up on the website. We'll look into that, because I think that's still. I know at least one person. I know one person who's in his 90s who's taking classes here. So I know you can do it, just the weather, the question of the cost. We'll look into that, Mike. Thank you. Julie in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Julie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I have a chemistry question now. I've changed the focus a
okay.
little bit. I am confused about the biphenol issue in plastics. It seems like people are going to the extreme of throwing out their, you know, Tupperware-type plastics and going to glass and not drinking out of the Lexan water bottles and going to stainless steel. And I thought that the release of the biphenol, at least in the research that I read, that really it's only released at when it's at plastic is subjected to high temperatures, like if you were to microwave it or maybe put a hot liquid in it. I'm wondering if you could shed some light on that for me.
Sure. Thank you, Julie, for your question. It depends on what kind of plastic is being used, so and how it's made, and how much of this bisphenol A that you mentioned is in it. By the way, the Milwaukee Sentinel, the journal, they ran an excellent series of articles about this, and they're still posted on their website. I highly recommend, Julie, that you go take a look at that. They raise important questions about the safety that relate to bisphenol A. In my own case, what I do is when I use bottled water, for example, I only refill it once before I recycle it.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of things get leached out. And I think it's better to be safe and to try to be responsible in recycling also, as I said before. I would not advocate, you know, wholesale throwing away of these plastic containers. You know, some are made of polycarbonate, some made of polyethylene. There are all kinds of different useful products that we have. But I would suggest that they not be used repeatedly.
All right. Thank you for calling. Jim in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? Where is Jim? We lose Jim? We lost Jim, I guess. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. As long as we're on education, I noticed that the U.S. Institutions awarded something like 48,000 doctorates in 2007, and that's the highest number ever. And in chemistry, the awards went up about 1.5% in 2007. And I think in engineering as well, the number of doctorates awarded was up substantially.
I think that's a tribute to the quality of our educational institutions. Even though we're talking about numbers, I want to talk about quality.
Yeah.
And this is a telltale that our quality of education is at the graduate level is extremely high. A lot of these 48,000 doctorates that were awarded in 2007 are not to U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
And that's another tribute to the quality of mm-hmm. education that we have here. These numbers, they tell us that people are interested in science, in technology, but in other areas as well. And so I think we. By the way, the data that you mentioned also provide a profile of women and making great advances in terms of earning the doctorate degree. I wouldn't say that the same thing about minorities. That's a different issue that requires our attention. But yes, the United States is the most prolific nation in the world in graduate education, and others around the globe trying to copy from us and try to get us to help them establish their own institutions. I'd like to see a bigger proportion of these PhD degrees awarded by U.S. institutions be given to U.S. citizens, to native-born students. And that, of course, requires starting at the grade level, a lower grade level, to sustain the interest that people, that kids would have in science, and then, you know, through high school and so on. All of these are related to the issues that we talked about a bit earlier. But I think it's really a great tribute to our institutions of higher education.
You have conducted yet another season of your Christmas lectures, showcasing the wonders of science, and those were recorded and are going to be broadcast, I should say, by Wisconsin Public Television. And if you haven't seen Bassam in action, I hope you'll tune in Sunday, December 21st at 7 a.m. Then again on Wednesday, Christmas Eve at 10:30 a.m. And then Christmas Day at 1:30 p.m. and Sunday, December 28th at 8 a.m. So all over the you're all over the time.
Well, this is a special series that I've been doing now. Number 39, been doing it for the 39th year. Once upon a Christmas cheery in the lab of Shaka Shiri. All these telecast times in the listening area here are available on the website of not only Wisconsin Public Television, but on my website. And, you know, this program that we did about 10 days ago, it's just a great fun.
A lot of fun.
A lot of fun. oversubscribed. And, Larry, it is my holiday gift to the community. And, and so I wish everyone the happiest of holidays. And to you, Larry, and your family, the same.
To you as well. Thank you, Bassam. And go to his website again. I want to mention that. Go to his website. Bassam's website is www.scifun.org, S-C-I-F-U-N.org. Lots of great information about science, science research, and science education. And we will see him next year. He'll be back next year, and we'll do this again. Coming up, we're going to take a look at brain fitness. How fit is your brain? I sometimes wonder about the fitness of my own brain. And I, you know what? I think in this day of Alzheimer's and other mental issues of this nature, I think many of us are. And Asenath LaRue, senior scientist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, is our guest next to talk about just that. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.